it's Flo, and this is my impression of a beat poet. Name your price. A tool, an idea, an inspiration. To do more than just say what you want to pay. Oh, no, but to see the options that could fit your budget. Steve, enough bongos.
Find car insurance that fits your budget at progressive.com.
Makes me want to dance. Steve!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blog Talk Radio.
Summer month of July still, and I'm really enjoying our weather right now. We have hot days in Northern California. We have mild days. I have friends in Texas that are dealing with heat. A friend just came back from North Carolina, and he was telling me that the weather's been beautiful there. So wherever you are in the U.S., I hope you're doing well. I hope your weather is great. And those of you listening outside of the U.S., I hope you're having a great summer. The Earth Engines website is currently down. It's down because we are in the process of reintroducing a completely new look, more interaction. We're going to have videos. We're going to have clips from previous shows. And then there's a huge archive of photographs that I've collected over the years of various ruins, various ancient sites. For me, it would be Central America, specifically the Yucatan Peninsula. But a number of our authors submit and continue to submit photos and graphs and illustrations from their books. And we want to be able to put that somewhere. And so this new website is going to have lots of details, lots of places to go, and reference material. Really, really important to follow up on a lot of these presentations with the material they present. And other than their books, there are links to specific websites that have data downloads, have articles. And so this new website is going to hopefully be released by the end of August and really be for you, the listener, to follow up on these programs. Because, you know, once somebody speaks, you may want more information. And right now I'm sending everybody to the Facebook page, but Facebook is a social media and it's really not designed for heavy content distribution. And it's just made for casual posts here and there, and I do try to get material up on the Facebook page, but sometimes it's just not great for a lot of detailed material. So stay tuned for that. I'll make some more announcements as the site gets ready to be launched. Speaking of the Facebook page, I put up a really cool video of Sri Lanka and the ruin of Sigiriya, which is a very old hand-carved ruin from a civilization that really is not well known. And this video is actually taken from a camcorder from the very bottom of the base of this ruin all the way to the top. If you follow the camera, if you follow the walking of this individual, he starts up these staircases, and you can see the amazing stone masonry on the walls, on the platforms, and it goes up several hundred feet. It's a sheer elevation, and it's a rock that's been carved, and it's beautiful. And I really, it's such a rare thing to see this. I've been trying to think about getting out there, but it's Sri Lanka is not a simple jump from here to from California out there. So this is a great way to experience this place. I've talked about it in the past, and it's a great opportunity to check out. So it's on the Facebook page. Go to Earth Ancients Facebook group, and it's a video, and it's got a lot of attention simply because of the way it was cut. It's not really known what tools were used. It's a possibility that some machining was done, but we just don't know. There's no way to tell. So check that one out. The other thing I want to mention is the crop circle phenomenon is up and coming again. I haven't really talked about crop circles on this program. 20 years ago when I was the conference director for the Learning Annex and with Whole Life Expo, the experts on crop circles were people like Colin Andrews in the UK, and I had him speak a number of times. Crop circles are a phenomenon where grain crops are manipulated in such a way that they form these circular patterns. Some of them are extremely complex geometric patterns. Others are simple, but they're designed in such a way that there's not really an explanation for them. And this is 20 years ago, and there's a big belief in the community that this phenomenon has been going on hundreds, perhaps even thousands of years, and there's no explanation for it. And so I posted on Facebook, Earth Ancients Facebook, go to group, a series of the most sophisticated of these crop circles for people to take a look at. And a number of the early crop circles are known to be hoaxes because the individuals who have created them have come out to talk about them and talk about what they did. But when you compare the crop circles done by these individuals and the ones that have no explanation, the ones that have no explanation are very, very sophisticated and created with a level of detail that humans could not do. So what I've decided to do is I've reached out to Hugh Newman, who is an author. You might remember Hugh. He wrote a book that came out recently on giants. But Hugh is also extremely interested and has his hands on the experts in England and throughout the UK on crop circles. And in August, we're going to do a special panel discussion on Earth Ancients the Radio on the crop circles, what they are, what they believe, how they believe, what the message might be. Are they ETs from ETs? Are they Earth energies? Which ones are hoaxes? Which ones are not? And what's the meaning behind crop circles? There's so much literature around the meanings of these unusual forms in grain fields. And I just thought that it would be interesting for us to hear from these people. And I'll let everybody know when this is going to be. It looks like late August, maybe even early September, we'll produce this event. It's going to be a panel of between 4 and 5 individuals. And I'm looking forward to it because it's been, like I said, 20 years since I heard anything from the experts. There's a lot of books that have come out and a lot of new people that have been studying the phenomenon, but I think it's time that we get to the root of it. And this panel discussion will be a nice eye opener. So stay tuned for the message on that. Stay tuned for the notification. I'll let everybody know. And, you can see, like I said, the best examples of these crop circles on our on the Facebook page. Go to Facebook, Earth Ancients, go to group, and the best of the best. It's like 15 images of what I consider the best of the best are. And these are complex geometric shapes that I don't know how, I mean, how they were made is beyond belief, but they're pretty cool to check out. So go to the Facebook page and see what's going on there. And as a reminder, always go to the Facebook page. Try to go there once a week. I'm going to slowly migrate people off of that when we get our new website up, because the website will be the all things Earth Ancients repository. So Facebook, like I said, it's fun to chat with others. And I'm also going to make available a blog that people can communicate with on the website. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up. So we've been discussing old and ancient cultures for a number of months. I mean, Earth Ancients is all about known and unknown cultures, known cultures that have left documentation who were written about from later civilizations, unknown civilizations who have left their mark in their ruins, in evidence with some of their artifacts. But each of these ancient cultures seem to have a connection to the earth, and they seem to have a connection to the cosmos, to the heavens. And we've heard from a number of Native Americans, and it's evident that the Native people of the Americas had a deep reverence for the stars, for the heavens. The Hopi, the Zuni, and other people either inherited ritual and ceremony that honored the heavens, the stars, and their ancestors. And it was important for them to not only have ritual, but kind of live a sacred life. And it's been fascinating for me over the years to speak with Native people, because they have an understanding of Gaia, of the earth, that we don't understand, that we are slowly beginning to understand as we study their culture, as we understand how they lived, how they continue to live, and their connection to the earth. My guest today is Gary David, and Gary is an independent researcher of Southwestern archaeological ruins and the rock art. He's been doing this for about 25 years. His books about the Hopi and other ancestral Pueblo cultures of Arizona and New Mexico include The Orion Zone, Eye of the Phoenix, The Kivas of Heaven, and Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest. I've heard about Gary. I've actually tried to get Gary on the show a couple of times and just couldn't connect. But he brings a unique aspect to understanding these Native cultures, in that their connection to the heavens isn't just for reverence, for ritual. There's a much, much deeper connection than we understand. And so his work is fantastic. And this new book that we're going to talk about today is called Mirrors of Orion, Star Knowledge of the Ancient World. Gary, how are you doing today?
Hi, Cliff. Glad to be here.
Really happy to have you. You spent a great deal of time discussing and uncovering the correlation of what you call heaven and earth, or on earth as it is in heaven. And let's open the program and discuss your early discoveries, which led you to the writing of this latest book. Graham Hancock and Michael Cremo, among others, claim that we are a species with amnesia, that the rituals, customs, and some of the ancient history that we once possessed has been lost. This is for current current Western culture. More important to this point, there's an aspect of mental, physical, and spirituality that we seem to have a void around. And you, in your books, are showing that the natives had a unique correlation to the constellations, and specifically the Orion constellation. Can you talk a little bit about your early discoveries and why this is an important discovery, this Orion correlation currently, and what we need to really see about it?
I have to go back quite a few years. I lived in South Dakota for about 15 years in the Black Hills. And I worked with the Lakota, and I taught on Pine Ridge Reservation. And I started talking to some of the elders, and they were talking about a sky earth correlation, and I had never heard of this sort of thing. You know, it's like mm-hmm. the old adage, as above, so below. And you know, the Lakota were, you know, the Lakota Sioux were the, you know, the great warriors of the Great Plains that you hear about and movies have been made about. But they are very spiritual people that were attuned to the stars, and in particular, the constellation Orion. They saw the constellation Orion as a giant buffalo in the sky. Mm-hmm. And the nose of this buffalo was the Pleiades. The backbone of this buffalo was Orion's belt. And the tail of this buffalo was the star Sirius, the brightest star in the sky. And so it's a huge constellation that they conceptualized. But not only that, they had places on the Earth corresponding to each one of these stars. And they would make a migration, a yearly migration, from one spot to another on the Earth around the Black Hills, and they would do a specific ceremony at a specific place that corresponded to a specific star. And you know, this is a really an amazing concept of this sky-Earth correlation. You know, I had never heard of anything like this before. And this was back in 1987. I was working with the Lakota and doing sweat lodges and so forth in Lakota. So, kind of got me started on this thinking about, you know, archaeoastronomy and the role of the celestial beings, the star ancestors, the role they played in the Native American life, not only for the Lakota, but other tribes as well. Mm-hmm. I moved down to Arizona in 1994 and started, going to the Hopi Reservation and going to Kachina dances and so forth. And, the Kachinas are the messenger spirits of the Hopi. They are kind of the intercessors between the sky gods and the people on Earth. The Kachinas are kind of like angels in the Christian religion. They're go-betweens between this celestial realm and the terrestrial plane that we live on. And it was a very complex culture, and the Hopi are still doing ceremonies throughout the year. They still live on these three primary mesas in northern Arizona. They live in stone masonry buildings that were built about 1,000 years ago. They started building these pueblos, these structures, mm-hmm. on the Hopi mesas. And they've been living there ever since, and they had dry farming of corn, beans, and squash. And they've been living pretty much the same for 1,000 years. Of course, the main culture intrudes a lot more than it used to. And you see, it's something like a satellite dish on top of an old pueblo, you know. Some of the villages don't have electricity or running water at all. So, you know, it's a kind of a mixed bag right now. But the ceremonies are still strong on the Hopi Reservation. And I started going up there mainly to the Kachina dances, which are held in the spring and summertime, early summer. And the Kachina dances are performed in order to stimulate in the growth of the corn and also to bring the rain to this very arid region.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was driving up to one of these Kachina dances and driving from the south, from Winslow, Arizona, and driving up, and I had just read Robert Duvall's book, The Orion Mystery.
Right.
And that book, of course, a lot of your listeners will be familiar with, you know, the Orion correlation theory that he proposes, that the three major pyramids on the Giza Plateau correspond to the belt stars of Orion. Okay. And I was, you know, driving up from Winslow towards the Hopi mesas, and as I say, the Hopi live on these three primary mesas. And, you know, I was kind of daydreaming, you know, a lot of space to daydream in when you're driving roads of Arizona.
Right.
And, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe there's an Orion correlation right here in Arizona. You know, just maybe that's true. And, you know, I put that in the back of my mind and went up and watched the Kachina dances. And then I got home and I got out a sky chart and I got out a map of Arizona and began to compare the two. And I found that there was a major village or ruin site corresponding to each major star in the constellation Orion.
Hmm.
And it wasn't simply the belt stars, which are the three primary mesas, but there were other ruin sites that corresponded to the other stars of Orion. And this one-to-one correspondence really kind of blew me away. It just, got me thinking. I had to go to all these sites and research all the sites in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And, I started doing that in 1997, and I'm still researching a similar material today.
Well, let me just ask you real quickly, when you started discovering these correlations in Arizona, did you ever have a chance to speak with any of the elders and say, I'm getting this correlation. Does this make sense to you? Do you understand that? Would they respond to you and say, yes, we understand? Or was it kind of like too early for them to understand what that was about?
Well, a lot of the Hopi are very circumspect. They're very polite, and they're not forthcoming as a people. And, you know, rightly so, because they've been exploited for many years by different factions and different people going in there. And you know, there was one ethnographer in the early 20th century that kind of forced his way into the kiva, the sacred underground prayer chamber, and you know, mm-hmm. just really exploited the culture for his own means, his own needs. But, you know, so the Hopi are used to this, and they're not really, you know, they don't want to share a lot of information. But, you know, I did talk with the late Martin Keshwesioma. He was, he lived on the third mesa, the village of Hotvilla, and he was the keeper of Prophecy Rock, which some of your listeners might be familiar with. It's a sacred stone carving that talks about, the world we live in now and the world we will inhabit. He was a caretaker of that particular petroglyphs panel up on the Hopi mesas. And you know, he was very enthused about, you know, this correlation. And you know, I had come out with one of my the first of my books, and I gave it to him, and he was very encouraging. And you know, I've had other elders, you know, just kind of give me the nod, not anything really specific coming out and saying, yeah, this is it. But mm-hmm. you know, they're very encouraging, and they're very interested in this, because Orion for the Hopi is probably the most important constellation, because they use Orion as to synchronize their winter solstice ceremony. When they're sitting down in the kiva, the underground prayer chamber, they sit down there, and there's an overhead hatchway, and they watch for the constellation Orion, the belt stars, to come into the hatchway, you know, so they can see the hatchway. And then they start the winter solstice ceremony on December 21st. It happens about midnight, so, you know, it starts in the middle of the night. For this solar ceremony, it's, you know, bringing back the sun, because the Hopi are not only star watchers, but they're sun watchers. They would, you know, use the rising of the sun at specific points on the horizon as to more or less construct a calendar for agricultural purposes, so they know when to plant a certain, you know, certain type of corn and beans and so forth.
Right.
So, you know, they were intensely geared toward watching the sky. And, of course, northern Arizona, even today, is great for sky watching. Lowell Observatory, where Percival Lowell studied the planet Mars, you know, that's
right.
Flagstaff, close to the Hopi reservation. So, you know, the skies are still, you know, pretty clear here, despite the coal-fired power plant is up near Page. That's causing some problems. But
I have to ask you, though, on this, and this is something that I don't think I've asked any other elder, but do you believe that this ancient mankind picked up this knowledge of sky watching through early ancient other cultures that understood the cosmos? Is it kind of transmuted or sent vibrationally, or can we go ahead and just be blunt about it and say it's because there were ETs walking the earth and they were the star people and they transmitted this information and the importance of star watching for crop propagation?
Well, that's a thorny question, Cliff. That's really a hard.
I gave you three choices, Gary. Come on now, you got to come up.
Yeah, I've studied the Hopi for quite some time. I'm a non-Hopi, of course. I'm not a Hopi elder or anything like that. I'm just kind of a student of the culture, and the culture is very complex.
Right.
It's the most complex, you know, religious cosmology that I've run across. You know, like I said, I worked with the Lakota too, and they've got a great culture that's a little bit different in some ways. But, you know, the Hopi are geared towards the stars. And like I said, you know, it's specifically Orion, because it, you know, it helps them synchronize the most important ceremony of the calendar year is the winter solstice, where the sun comes back. So, you know, they have a tradition of these kachinas that came down from the heavens, and they have the concept of flying shields. These flying shields called Paatu Vota. They, the kachinas piloted some of these things. They came down and they interacted with the people and walked among the people. And in the beginning, the Kachinas came as physical beings. They were actually, you know, corporeal creatures of some sort. But now, because of the culture that it has devolved through the ages, now they only come in spirit. And the Kachinas, come when the Kachina dances are held in the village plaza, and they kind of take over the Kachina dancer, and the dancer actually becomes one of these spirits while he is dancing.
That's fascinating.
So,
yeah.
You know, he is kind of, he's divorced from his own ego and his own being, and the Kachinas inhabit this person who's dancing in order to bring rainfall and bring fertility to the very dry place. But so the Hopi have this tradition of these creatures, these entities coming down from the sky, and sometimes there are legends of these creatures mating with Hopi women, and this sounds very familiar, in a biblical sense, the sons of God who mated with the daughters of men, Anunnaki, they came down from the heavens and mated with women, human women. Mm-hmm. The Hopi have these same legends of these sky beings coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's possibly celestial blood in the Hopi veins,
mm-hmm.
So the Hopi are really connected, have this strong connection to the star ancestors.
Fascinating.
And, there's one Hopi god. He's called Masao. And he's a really kind of a frightening being. And some Hopi, I've talked to Hopi that they don't even like to talk about this being. But the creature, the creature supposedly has very long arms and long feet. He's very tall, and he has a large head and large eyes, large round eyes, and a large round mouth. And his skin is gray, In fact, the word Masao, the word M-A-S, the root word of Masao, means gray in Hopi language. So this gray creature, and he's the god of this earth plane, but also the god of the underworld. He's analogous to the Egyptian Osiris.
Fascinating.
And excuse me. I've also found correspondences between the Hopi culture and the ancient Egyptian culture, and linguistic correspondences, and we can talk about maybe the Grand Canyon, Lost City in the Grand Canyon, which is also supposedly had Egyptian artifacts.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into that, but let's talk a little bit quickly here, just to kind of give our listeners an idea. This new book, Mirrors of Orion. The Orion constellation you show, not only in Arizona, we're going to talk about another correlation you found in Africa. And whenever there's this correlation, map on Earth, and you show it with cities spread out in the shape of the constellation, there is a level of sophistication surrounding that. Now, when you're showing this, do you believe that the connection between the constellation in the heavens of Orion and the reproduction of it on Earth is transmitted by some superior beings because the energetics around Orion are such that it creates a positive flow of energy or something? What would be the reason to reproduce a pattern in the shape of the Orion constellation? That's the big question I have.
I think from my point of view, my opinion is that it's a kind of an homage to star ancestors that came from Orion. And these might not be actual physical creatures. They might be interdimensional beings that interacted with the people. And, you know, the Igbo culture in Nigeria, you mentioned that particular correlation, they were very attuned to the spirits, various spirits, and the spirits of the stars as well. And I believe that they try to mirror, you know, as above, so below. They try to mirror on Earth the way they saw the origin of these star beings from the constellation Orion.
Okay.
And it was more or less as a way to signal to them and draw down the particular energy from each one of the stars. So each one of the stars has a particular energy. You know, astrologers will, you know, if you go into fixed astrology, astrologers say that each one of the stars has a particular energy that is projected upon the Earth or projected upon one's natal chart, so to speak, when
okay.
you're born. You know, you know, it gives a certain energy to your character, astrologically speaking. The star Sirius, for instance, you know, is very, very potent. It's the brightest star in the sky. And, you know, it's a lot of cultures also focus on Sirius. You know, this realm of the sky around Orion, you know, the constellation Taurus is also very important, Taurus the bull.
Right.
Orion and Sirius, they're right together. Like I say, the Lakota have this huge constellation of the buffalo that incorporates all three of those constellations. So
okay.
a lot of cultures kind of look to that region of the sky. I would say maybe the other region of the sky might be the circumpolar regions of, you know, the Big Dipper, Little Dipper, and Draco, that region, what the Egyptians call the imperishable stars, the stars
okay.
that never set, you know. But a lot of cultures seem to focus in on this region of the sky, focusing in on the belt stars of Orion, and a lot of cultures have specific legends involving the constellation Orion and kind of mythological tales regarding Orion, not just Orion the hunter, as we know from the Greek mythology, but other tales as well.
Is it your belief that possibly this constellation of Orion has more significance than just maybe the vibrational flow or whatever? Maybe that it's it's the origins of Earth human, or maybe we were populated by a very, very ancient civilization that came from Orion. Is that a possibility?
Well, you know, the Orion Nebula, which is in the center, you know, is below the belt. The nebula is a kind of a star nursery, and stars are being created all the time. But they recently found that there's a black hole at the center of the Orion Nebula. So, you know, there's a great mystery concerning this region of the sky. The Maya had a specific a focus on this particular region, the Orion Nebula. They felt it was the hearthstones of the sky. The hearthstones being stars Almitak in the belt and the 2 feet of Orion or knees of Orion, the star Sif and the star Rigel, and these form an equilateral triangle with the Orion Nebula right in the center. of this, and the fire in the center of this, they found the Maya, the ancient Maya, felt this significant as kind of a birthplace, the Xibalba, the underworld place, passageway to eternal life. They had a great significance to this region of the sky. So I think, the star ancestors might have been coming from this region of the sky. I recently saw a new photo of the Orion Nebula, and it said that there were kind of mini planets that were seen in this area of the sky as well. So
it's fascinating to consider. Yeah.
Yeah, it's we're learning new things all the time about with the Hubble and other telescopes that we didn't know before, and it's confirming a lot of the ancient myths that we know about from ethnographers and anthropologists who studied people like the Dogon and the Igbo culture. So,
right.
It's a fascinating time to be alive and to learn about these ancient connections that are being verified right now through scientific inquiry.
Your book has wonderful views of different parts of the world, mostly ancient parts, which I really enjoy. But I want to ask you, for the most part, the areas that this overlay, the Orion constellation overlay, appears are pretty positive, except perhaps Syria. And you show an interesting correlation between the Templar Knights, Syria, and the Orion constellation. The level of detail that you present, not only in the ruins from the Templar Knights, but what's happening currently, And that area is having tremendous problems. Syria is in horrible flux, and it's not really a positive outcome. Is there some significance to that, would you say, in the correlation? Are we seeing a mini evolution before our eyes from negative to positive, or what? What do you say about that?
It looks pretty bleak right now in Syria. I was watching a History Channel program, and it was about the Knights Templar castles that are located in Syria. And the program dealt with three main castles, Tortosa, Castle Blanc, and Croc de Chevalier. These three castles that are kind of go from west to east in a line. And, I was thinking, edged into this thing about the Hopi, the correspondence with the Hopi. I thought, maybe there's a correspondence between these three castles in a line and the constellation, the belt stars of Orion, So I started looking at other ruin sites in the region and tried to project the constellation onto a map like I did with Arizona. I found that the site of Baalbek corresponded to the star Betelgeuse in the right shoulder of Orion.
Wow.
And, Baalbek is a huge, a megalithic site. A lot of people have written about it recently. It's huge megalithic stones that are fit together. And, they're some of the largest stones on Earth that have been quarried. And, Betelgeuse is a major star in the constellation, and one of the primary, it's a big red star in the right shoulder of Orion. And also, I found that on the north side of Syria, there's Ugarit, the ruined site, the Canaanite site of Ugarit. So, you know, and that corresponds to the star Rigel, which is the other really bright star in the constellation Orion. It's the left foot or leg of Orion. So, you know, it all started to come together, you know, again, that these villages or ruin sites were precisely in a pattern that mirrored the constellation Orion. And, you know, mm-hmm. again, I was just, you know, I started making these connections. And whether or not this is all true, I'm just throwing the material out there for people to read and consider. And if they want to accept it, that's fine. If they don't, you know, I'm just providing a lot of possibilities for thinking about the world in different terms, the sky-earth correlation idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that Syrian section was quite fascinating because I didn't realize there were so many Templar Knight castles and fortifications in Syria. And
it's really heartbreaking to see, you know, the destruction of these places.
Yeah.
I heard that one of the sites was, and this is supposedly one of the most beautiful castles in the world. You know, Lawrence of Arabia thought that this was one of the best preserved and most beautiful castle in the world. And I recently heard that it was totally gutted. It was destroyed.
Yeah.
In the war there, and it's just heartbreaking to see the destruction. And you know, you begin to think that this is all part of the plan that the Hopi, you know, say that the fourth world, which we're currently living in, mm-hmm. the end of the fourth world, is, you know, slowly devolving, and it's very soon about to end. And, you know, you see these signs about destruction of ancient sites. And, you know, you think that, you know, we're at the end of an age.
Mm-hmm.
That the age is winding down. And the Hopi believe that we will go into the fifth world, which will be a world of peace and unity. But just turn on the news and you see that from all, you know, every day there's some catastrophe, and it's wearing on the psyche of the planet, I believe. The whole
yeah.
planet is being assailed by, you know, by events seemingly beyond our control.
Yeah, I agree. It saddens me to see these Middle Eastern ruins destroyed. ISIS is, you know, wrecking them because they don't follow the pattern of their philosophy, and so they destroy it rather than letting it go and bypassing it. But I think if you look at history, this has happened throughout history where various cultures who are up and coming will want to destroy an existing culture because it questions, you know, their veracity and their theories of how the earth
yeah.
should be and how culture should be. So I when I think of that, it's a little bit easier for me, but as somebody who cherishes any of the ancient ruins that we have left, it's still hard to see that. It's really tough.
It's a trying time. You know, it's exciting in one way because we know more now about ancient cultures than any other culture in any other time in history. You know, we know more about them, but at the same time, these ancient artifacts are being destroyed at a ferocious rate, and you know, it seems that there's got to be some kind of deliverance from this mindset that we're living in right now. And
yeah.
I think the Hopi, you know, some of the Hopi elders I've talked to believe that the fourth world will end in their lifetime.
Mm.
And so it's coming very soon. A lot of the people, the Hopi are very prophetic kind of people, and they had a lot of prophecies about the end of the fourth world. So the Hopi have lived through, they've gone through three different world destructions. The first world was destroyed by fire, some kind of asteroid strike, or comet strike, or volcanism, and then the people sort of recovered and began to live in the second world. But the second world was destroyed by ice, and the Hopi believe that there was a pole shift, in fact.
Hmm.
And then the third world was destroyed by a great flood, which is kind of a universal piece of many cultures, of most cultures around the earth, that destruction by flood. And then, the remaining survivors escaped. The Hopi believe that they escaped this flood by going on reed rafts across the Pacific Ocean. And they came to the west coast of the North American continent. And they went through the Gulf of California and up the Colorado River and into the Grand Canyon and rose out of the Grand Canyon to go into the fourth world. And so, the Hopi are very cognizant of these world destructions. And a lot of the Hopi elders believe that we're at the end of the fourth world.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's unfortunate it has to be such a destructive ending. But, of course, that's better than having the whole planet destroyed by fire, floods, or something else. Maybe these small skirmishes are the final pains of the destruction, and then we go into the next phase.
It's hard to say. Some Hopi say that like the old saying, "The fire next time." The fire will be the end of the fourth world as well as was the first world.
Hey, if you like our programming, you like our speakers, you like the material that we have on our show each week, check out Gaia. Gaia is probably one of the best places to go on the web for thousands of videos on subjects like ancient history, the pyramids, sacred science, the unexplained, just tons and tons of material. And many, many, many of our presenters are on Gaia. And Gaia is our sponsor, and I need you to support them because they are what keeps us going. Without Gaia's contribution, it's going to be tough for us to keep having the great programming. So check out Gaia. They're offering a new program, a special introductory offer of just 99 cents this month. And then after that, it's $9.95. This is a great resource, for thousands and thousands of hours of programming, of information, of videos. They've been collecting and they've been producing videos for years. And this is a great, great program. To get the deal, go to Gaia.com/Earth Ancients. That's Gaia.com/Earth Ancients. And check them out. Remember, when you support them, you support Earth Ancients. I want to ask you, in your book, you talk a lot about beginning of the age of Taurus and Earth being bathed in gamma ray discharges. One scientist calls them galactic superwaves. And I've heard about this before. In fact, I've heard of it from an elder who is a mentor of mine, a Mayan elder. And the significance of these gamma waves and the evolution of humanity are fairly significant to them. Can you talk a little bit about this significance and why? I mean, you wrote extensively about it in the book, and these cosmic rays, some people believe were given information before they hit. But anyhow, I'm interested in what you believe on that. It's kind of fascinating.
Well, Paul LaViolette talked about these galactic superwaves, these electromagnetic radiation coming from the center of the galaxy. Now, that's just one theory about, the destruction about 12,000 years ago, that this galactic superwave came and disrupted our solar system, kind of reversed the solar wind, which it radiates outward from the sun, of course. But this galactic superwave came and kind of reversed the solar wind, so the solar wind was pushed back towards us, and it disrupted a lot of the solar system, including the Earth. That's his theory about this.
Mm-hmm.
There are different theories. Graham Hancock talks about the comet that came 12,800 years ago and hit mm-hmm. North America. And this right. is another theory. Robert Schock has the theory of plasma barrages of the Earth about that time. So there are different theories about what happened about this time where a lot of the cultures say that there was a great destruction. The Hopi it corresponds to the destruction of the Hopi first world by fire. So there are different theories about this particular destruction about a little over 12,000 years ago, the people picked up the pieces and constructed Göbekli Tepe around this time in Turkey, and kind of jump started civilization after this great cataclysm. So, there are different theories about this that, and you can read about, this in my book, Mirrors of Orion. And I also have some about Hopi prophecy and the destruction of the worlds in my other books.
Okay. But I think just real quickly, every time these superwaves hit, Earth, it seems like there is a renaissance, a cultural renaissance. And I think there's somebody that has begun writing or has a book that reveals that whenever we get bathed in one of these gamma ray discharges, it kind of sparks intelligence, not maybe immediately, but it begins to trigger things. And I wondered if you had anything to contribute to that theory that these gamma rays, these superwaves, these galactic pulsations are a form of evolution.
Well, I think definitely these superwaves coming in do affect the psyche more than we realize. The kind of mini renaissance in the late 60s, early 70s, might have something to do with that idea of the superwaves coming through. This is all really speculation, and we can't say there's no scientific. The scientists tend to discount any influence of these galactic waves on humans,
mm-hmm.
but. Other more metaphysical people working in alternative history believe that this does kind of channel evolution in a certain direction. So this might be possible.
Hmm. It's just fascinating to consider. You do mention it quite a bit and you discuss it. But hey, I want to get into the meat of your book. Now, you've already brought up the fact that Robert Bevall's seminal book on the Orion constellation correlation in the Giza Plateau and the pyramids is significant. I mean, he basically shows that they spent considerable amount of time, energy, and resources to build these pyramids in the direct path and duplicating the Orion system. Now, you found the same thing in Arizona. And what did you find in your correlation that makes it unique? Did you find, was it cities or was it ruins or buildings that make up the correlation of Orion in Arizona?
Well, it's basically villages that were built about 1,000 years ago, or perhaps a little more than that. The Hopi began to make a series of migrations around the Southwest, and in fact, the Hopi went on a great migration and went to the four points of the compass. They went north into Canada. And the book I'm working on now has some pictographs or rock paintings of the Snake Clan up in Alberta, Canada. So, you know, the Hopi were known to go up in, as far north as that. And the Hopi, of course, had a direct relationship with the Maya people in Mexico, southern Mexico, and
right.
Central America. The Hopi traded goods and also imported scarlet macaws, these beautiful, brilliant birds from the jungles of Mesoamerica. And they found whole birds in burials in Arizona and New Mexico.
So, right, that's amazing.
Macaw feathers were used in a lot of the ceremonies. So there was a trade network between, you know, between the Maya territory and the ancient Hopi, the ancestral Hopi territory. But the Hopi also, of course, went to the Pacific and gathered a lot of seashells and so forth, so they're familiar with that. They also went to the Atlantic Ocean, all the way to the Atlantic, and the book I'm working on now talks about the Hopi at Serpent Mound, the Snake Clan of the Hopi, having something to do with the construction of Serpent Mound in the Ohio Valley. So
wow.
The Hopi, you know, were making these migrations before they came to what they call the center place, which is the Tuwana Sabi, is the center of the world, the center of their being. It's kind of like the Black Hills in South Dakota. You know, that's the center place. That's the center, the spiritual center of the Lakota world, is the Black Hills and Harney Peak and so forth. But the Hopi, kind of migrated, made this spiral migration around until they finally settled in northern Arizona on these three primary mesas, which corresponds to the belt stars of Orion. But they also built villages outside of this region. There are villages, ancient ruins you can visit today. There are national monuments and state parks that you can visit that have these ancestral Pueblo ruins in them. I talk about this in my book, really all my books, about the specific sites, many different sites, the villages that these Hopi lived in, and then they abandoned these villages, okay? And it was part of the long migration route to finally settle at the center place where they live right now in these stone pueblos.
That's fascinating. Did you find any parallels between Egyptian ritual and symbology and Hopi ritual and symbology? Is there any similarity in what they do that is maybe a symbol of an Orion pattern of some kind?
Well, it's hard to really compare an ancient culture like Egypt to a contemporary culture like the Hopi. But, of course, the Hopi go back thousands of years in this region. You know, they lived more scattered out before they came to the center place. They lived in kind of what they call pit houses, separate housing structures that are semi-subterranean. But before they built these pueblos, these, you know, stone apartment buildings, you know, the Hopi lived kind of spread out. I have found certain correspondences linguistically between the Hopi and the ancient Egyptians. For instance, the Hopi word for star is Sohu, and the Egyptian word for the stars of Orion is Sahu. It's
really?
almost the same. And when you consider that for the ancient Egyptians, you know, a person who is deceased goes to the constellation Orion. You know, Osiris represented Orion, and the soul goes to this celestial place in the stars, and the Hopi are much the same. You know, as I said before, the god Masao, the spooky gray god Masao, corresponds to Osiris in the Egyptian mythology, a very, very similar correspondence. And, you know, I've come up with I found other linguistic similarities. For instance, the Hopi word tuat means mystical vision or illusion. And the Egyptian word tuat, or duat, it's sometimes spelled, is the realm of the afterlife, where the mystical insights, you find mystical insight there. So these two words, duat for mystical vision and tuat, the afterlife of the Egyptians, you know, are very similar. And you got to think that, well, maybe there was an actual interaction between the two cultures at some point.
That's fascinating.
And you think about the possibility of the Grand Canyon cave that we could get into. It's kind of an interesting story about a possible Egyptian or Buddhist site in the Grand Canyon. A lot of your listeners.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Gary. Tell. I mean, our audience some people may have heard about. And this goes way back. We've had people on the show have talked about the Smithsonian Institute having discovered evidence of Egyptian ruins, artifacts. In fact, there's even stories of caves where there were mummies found. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about
that? Well, the story came out in an article in the Arizona Gazette. It was April 5th, 1909. And the article was a front page article. It's over 2,000 words, and it talked about a guy named G.E. Kincaid, who took a boat. He was a contract worker for the Smithsonian, and he took a boat down the Colorado River from Green River, Wyoming, and he started in October of 1908. And he sailed down the Colorado, and he was looking for, you know, he was looking for gold or silver, but he was also working for the Smithsonian, doing, you know, just survey work for the Smithsonian. And he went down the river, and he went through a place in the Grand Canyon called Marble Canyon. And just north of the Little Colorado, where the Little Colorado River flows into the main Colorado River, he spotted on the side of a cliff. It was about 2,000 feet above the river, kind of a rectangular entranceway in the side of the cliff. And he climbed up this cliff face, and it was an arduous climb because the article said he made this climb with great difficulty, and it must have been a tremendous understatement, you know, because the cliff is nearly vertical, you know, at that point in the Grand Canyon. And he climbed up there, and he went inside this cave, and he went about 50 or 60 feet horizontally into the cave, and he came across a lot of passageways, and chambers, big rooms, giant chambers, and like one of the chambers, he said that the passageways were radiating like spokes on a wheel from this main chamber, you know, and a huge complex of caves. And he said that there were like oval-shaped doors and ventilation shafts, you know, just the fantastic stuff that he found. And in one of the rooms had a life-size statue of the Buddha with two lotus in a lotus posture, with holding a lotus in each hand.
Wow.
Okay. So you have, you know, Tibetan, possibly Tibetan artifacts there. But he also found copper and gold cups and copper weapons, and there was some kind of smelting operation going on, and there was enameled pottery that he found, and he found like stone tablets with some sort of hieroglyphics on them. And, there was like a dining hall that could see, you know, it was a huge dining hall. And the article incredibly states that this whole complex was several hundred rooms and could hold up to 50,000 people. So, you know, it's just an amazing complex that Kincaid found. And supposedly the Smithsonian came out and excavated this cave. He also sent back to Washington some artifacts to the Smithsonian. And one of the things I found while researching this story, the secretary of the Smithsonian at the time in 1909 was a guy named Charles Walcott. And Walcott was very well connected. He knew Teddy Roosevelt, Calvin Coolidge, and Woodrow Wilson, and, you know, Andrew Carnegie, you know, very millionaire Andrew Carnegie. And, you know, he was very well connected in Washington. And he would have been the guy to receive these artifacts from Kincaid. And like I said, the Smithsonian, after the initial discovery, the Smithsonian came out and supposedly took a lot of these artifacts back to Washington. But in the course of the research for this, you know, I found out that Charles Walcott, turns out he had been in the Grand Canyon working for the U.S. Geological Survey when he was about 30 years old in 1882. Now, the Kincaid found this site in supposedly 1909, but Walcott had been there in this very place where the cave is supposed to be located, because the article is very specific about where the cave is located. It said that it was 42 miles upstream from Crystal Creek, which is kind of by, you know, the main part of where you go into the Grand Canyon National Park now. It's across on the north side that you can kind of see if you look across. But, you know, it's 42 miles upstream, and it's nearby where the Little Colorado River flows in to the main Colorado River. So Walcott was in this area doing surveying work for the Geological Survey, and he may have stumbled across this cave himself and just kept quiet for 25 years about
fascinating.
About
yeah.
Or, you know, he may have just looked at this rectangular entrance and thought, that's interesting, you know, made a mental note of it. And, you know, when Kincaid found this cave, then, you know, they sent other people to excavate the material in the artifacts in the cave. Mm-hmm. And a lot of speculation goes on what happened to these artifacts, you know.
Yeah, that
and
typically
we get into
is
this
the story when it comes to the
Smithsonian.
Yeah.
You know, the speculation about destruction of artifacts and destruction of bones. And like I say, not only were there artifacts, but there were Egyptian-style mummies in this cave, too. Mm-hmm. They were laid out on rock slabs in this one chamber. So there might have been mummies as well as these artifacts. But where they got to, it's, you know, there's speculation that Walcott might have sold these to wealthy collectors that he knew, or they might be sitting in the final scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark. They might be down in the basement of in the warehouse in the Smithsonian somewhere.
Yeah,
there's also speculation that they might have taken these to San Diego and loaded on a ship and then dumped into the Pacific. Because the idea of Egyptian artifacts or Tibetan artifacts in the Grand Canyon is totally contrary to the archaeological paradigm that was currently in play in the beginning of the 20th century. And that would destroy, you know, the whole paradigm. And there are powers that be, very powerful people, that wanted to keep, you know, that wanted to say that, no, there was not interaction between cultures in ancient times.
Right.
Now we call this the isolationist theory of archaeology, as opposed to the hyper-diffusionist theory of archaeology, that, you know, there was nothing before Columbus. Interaction before, or at least they might, you know, say, well, maybe the Vikings came here for a while and settled in Newfoundland, you know, and so forth. But that's all that mainstream archaeologists will admit to. But
yeah.
There is, you know, increasing evidence that there's been interaction between the cultures in very early times. I've researched the Hopi legends about this, and the Hopi legends say that they escaped the Great Flood by going across the Pacific Ocean from west to east on these reed boats, and they came to North America that way. And some of my books, I give genetic evidence for this link between the Western Pacific and the native people, indigenous people in the American Southwest.
Wow. That's fascinating. Yeah, there's some other authors have been talking about that. Gary Little talks a little bit about that too in some of his books. Greg Little, Dr. Greg Little. In the few minutes we have left, I want to ask you about an interesting point you make regarding the Orion constellation, its specific placement on Earth, and how it corresponds to the human chakra system. Can you discuss that a little bit? I think I'm interested in that simply because it gets back to the unseen vibrational, and you can even call them electromagnetic patterns that we as human beings deal with all the time. And we don't talk enough about it in our society simply because we don't understand it. The Chinese have dealt with meridians and Chinese medicine and acupuncture for thousands and thousands of years, but Western culture just poo-poos that. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you discovered. I found it was quite fascinating.
Yeah, the Hopi also have an idea of the chakra system. The Hopi, according to the Hopi, there are five chakras instead of seven, like the Hindu system. has, but they have a similar system. And during the course of research, when I projected the Orion constellation onto Arizona, and I was looking at what would be the spine of Orion, there was a straight line, and there were about a dozen villages aligned in a straight line from southwestern Colorado at Mesa Verde, that region up there where, the cliff dwellings are, and going through Middle Mesa, also called Second Mesa, and going through the head of Orion on the map. And you can see these. I have a map page on my website, theorionzone.com. There's a map page that you can conceptualize it a lot better if you just see it, this correspondence. This straight line goes from southwestern Colorado through the Second Mesa and into a place called Walnut Canyon, which is about 50 miles east of Flagstaff. That's the head of Orion. And it continues onward into the Sedona area, believe it or not. And it kind of ends at a place called Tuzigoot, which is a hilltop ruin. And there are a number of these chakra sites in Arizona corresponding to the different vibrational wheels of the chakra system. And the crown chakra is this site of Tuzigoot, and really the whole Sedona region, which is in the Verde Valley, and it's famous for vortexes and vibrational energy. And this area represents the crown chakra of the Orion correlation in Arizona.
Well, let me quickly just ask you, I see what you're saying there, but, and you may have written this in the book, but do those corresponding areas of the chakra system actually have a sensation of the brain or of that area of the head where we correspond? So if you go to those areas, are the vortexes kind of like, oh man, I feel lightheaded, I'm going into an altered state? I mean, people who are sensitive, obviously, but that feeling?
Well, definitely the crown chakra and the area of Sedona. If you've ever been to Sedona, yes. I live outside of Sedona, and every time I drive into it, I can feel the vibrational change, and it feels like the top of my head is kind of floating off.
I love that. Okay, well, that answers my question.
I honestly don't see how people get any work done there, in Sedona. maybe you get used to it or something, but, there's it's not just New Age BS, there is something to that, the energy, the different vortexes. And I think it's partially because it's part of the crown chakra. Now, if you look at the gut chakra, a very rooted area, that corresponds to Second Mesa, which is really the center of the Hopi culture. And the Hopi are very centered people. They're very practical people. They grow corn, beans, and squash, and they do their ceremonies in order to keep the whole world in balance. That's their function. That's the reason why they keep doing these very elaborate ceremonies throughout the year. Take a lot of time and energy to perform these, and every part of the year has a certain ceremony that they go through. But, it's this very, very rooted kind of a place that corresponds to the gut chakra. And, I guess if you go to these places, depending on how sensitive you are to them, you might experience something like the corresponding chakra. The third eye would be would be Walnut Canyon, which is the pineal gland. And pineal means pine, by the way. It's from like a pine cone. It's shaped like a pine cone. And, you know, this is this is the area of pine trees up in the near Flagstaff, and a lot of evergreen and pine trees up there, ponderosa pine. And so, you know, there are correspondences, if you're sensitive, to these various areas that that you can experience.
Okay. And would you say that the other locations like Syria, and we also, and we're going to have you come back and talk about your African discovery, because I find that fascinating too. Would you say they also have corresponding chakra alignments in those areas too, or is it just prevalent in Arizona?
Well, my main focus has been Arizona, and you know I mean, if you went to these places, I think you'd really have a lot of these places to really see if there's, you know, these chakra alignments there at these places. But, you know, there certainly are a lot of different correlations around the globe. You know, the one that, Teotihuacan has been mentioned as an Orion correlation. And my book talks about there's an Orion correlation in Scotland, an Orion correlation in Yorkshire, England, the Thornborough Henges. There's one in Italy, in northern Italy. There's one in the Shenzhou province of China. So, you know, if you go to these places, if you were able to go to all these places, you would find out more about the specifics of these places. Whether there's a chakra alignment on the Giza Plateau, it's hard to say. You know, people have speculated on, you know, the whole Orion constellation as projected on the Giza Plateau and surrounding region, and how, you know, what, and there's dispute about, you know, the different stars corresponding to different sites. So I think more research really needs to be done in this area at each of these places to find out specifically whether, you know, they have a chakra alignment or not.
It's interesting. I find that our current level of evolution doesn't really talk about unseen energies, energetics, I call them. And it seems that we have had a number of authors and in my own research that the ancients understood subtle energy in ways we just cannot understand. There was a pyramid culture thousands of years ago that built pyramid complexes, and we now know that a number of the main pyramids were built over geomagnetic energetic fields that actually greatly enhanced those, and some people have speculated that the emanations were very good for the body and could be kind of a body-mind-spirit focus. But I want to ask you, in our kind of a final question for you, do you believe that the layout of these cities that corresponded with the Orion constellation were done so to benefit the body, mind, and spirit, and that the ancients built these for that specific reason?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Yeah, you know, the healing energy that you get from the specific sidereal influences of each star, the ancients could focus in on the energy of, for instance, Sirius, the star, the brightest star in the heavens, and this corresponded in ancient Egypt to the goddess Isis. And there's a whole complex of energy surrounding that feminine figure of Isis. So, you know, it depends on what was needed for different healing. There's a lot of theories about sound healing and so forth, but I think the celestial aspect of each of these sites, you know, the fact that they took this pattern and projected it onto the earth For instance, Egypt was in the image of the heavens, was constructed in the image of the heavens. That's what Thoth, the god Thoth, said. You know, this is a very real thing that the ancients knew about, and we're just beginning to understand the subtleties. You know, we work now, especially archaeologists, are very materialistic. They work with a material culture. They work with stones and bones, and you know, we're just starting to get into the more subtle aspects of these ancient cultures, the psychological aspects, the spiritual aspects of these ancient cultures. We're beginning to see that they did have these insights, and the relationship between sky and earth was very important, and it was one gestalt, it was one totality between sky and earth. And it wasn't the sky was not estranged today for us in large cities. You know, the sky beings and star ancestors were very a real presence in ancient people. And you know, I think that we're just beginning to understand this.
Yeah, and it's amazing that, and I agree that the Western culture is very myopic and unable to really look any further than what's in front of them. And until we develop, and I'm hopeful of this, that until we develop technology that can see these subtle emanations, like, say, the aura, mm-hmm. can see how plants project and how the earth sends energy and how the body, the human being, receives that energy. I don't think people will take it seriously until we can actually see it. So,
I think that's the science of the future. It will be, we'll head in that direction. We've gone through the materialistic age, the Renaissance, and it was, you know, a time of materialism and observing, you know, the material aspects of life. But I think we're getting back to this kind of spiritual aspect and uniting it with physical, you know. I think science will catch up to what the ancients knew long ago.
Fantastic. Gary, David has been my guest. This new book, I really suggest you get a copy of it. It's called Mirrors of Orion, Star Knowledge of the Ancient World. And it's filled with fantastic graphs, great photographs, just a lot of great illustrations. It's packed with information. And it's his latest book. You can also read about Gary and his work on his website, which is theorionzone.com. www.theorionzone.com, and it's filled with fantastic information. And of course, if you want the books, you can get them there. But also, if you go to Amazon.com, all his books are there. Gary, it's been fantastic. I'm gonna have to have you back on because you're a wealth of knowledge, and it kind of helps us ground. I get people on the program that are a little esoteric, and it's a pleasure to hear from somebody who's spent a better part of his life researching this. I was thinking when I first started reading your work, I was thinking about Frank Waters' book, The Book of Hopi. And transmit information on ritual and ceremony from a Caucasian, a white person's point of view, and they actually let him in. But your work actually takes it to the next level. So you're kind of a modern day Frank Waters.
Well, that's a great compliment. Thank you, Cliff.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, it's a pleasure, and continued success. And I definitely want to contact you. We'll have you on the program again. All right.
That's great. Great. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. So that was Gary David, and this book, you got to get it. It's Mirrors of Orion, and we didn't even get into the details that Greg shows on Africa. There's definite evidence of a lost civilization there, sophisticated civilization, And the building of walls of many pyramids in Nigeria and other parts of Africa is just a real eye-opener. We're going to have Greg on again to explain that. So that's it for today's program. Stay tuned for next week. And also remember to check in on the Facebook page. And I'll also be mentioning in future shows this new website we're building that's going to have just tons of information on it, on our guests, but not only our guests, on how you can keep abreast of all the latest news and reporting and evidence of ancient Earth, Earth Ancients. Have a great day.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car, because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. You know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun. And hey, you know what else you don't see? You don't see me leaving for work in the morning, because I missed so much time with court and everything that I got fired.
Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Flo, and this is my impression of a drill instructor directing a musical.
Tan Hut! Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands! Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step ball change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.